You're listening to Rambling Business, the only multimedia podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about building a legacy with nature even when you're on the San Andreas Fault.
Uh-oh.
We continue our Greater Palm Springs Desert Area series by taking you back into history a little bit, We'll be visiting Thousand Palms Oasis Preserve right outside of Palm Springs, and here we'll be talking about how business and community developed to create a legacy cherished by thousands of visitors every year. Also coming your way, of course, are some business tips, a travel tip, and our tax tale.
Back in the 1940s, Paul Wilhelm inherited the 80-acre Thousand Palms Oasis situated on the San Andreas Fault just outside of Palm Springs. Now, this is really cool because I've been going to Palm Springs for over 30 years, and I really never knew where the San Andreas Fault was until we went to this place.
You never know until the earthquake
happens. That's right.
Exactly where it is.
But I know that it ran pretty close to the Palm Springs Greater or the Greater Palm Springs area or Palm Springs City. It's, you know, it's close to that too. But actually, all this time I always thought it was on the west side. It's on the east side.
Oh, it's a
little closer. Away from it. Yeah. Anyway, Paul's father, Lewis Wilhelm, acquired it by trading two mules and a wagon 40 years earlier.
Talk about a good investment.
Yeah.
Well, mules were expensive back then, so.
You think that movie Two Mules for Sister Sarah was about it? I don't think so.
I've never heard of that movie, and I doubt it.
Okay. So anyway, Paul inherited this area, and he started to rent cabins in tent sites. And so he was creating all these different like of community developments, really early community development type things of what he's doing.
Yeah, around here. The oasis, right?
Right. He dammed up some of the water and created reservoirs and swimming pools because what happened here is that what we learned when we were on a tour there is that water percolates from the fault.
Oh, okay.
That's why when you travel this area in many areas, you look for a string of green trees and plants in an area where there's nothing growing. And most likely that is a fault area where water's percolating up.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a good way to determine where there's faults. Not that it's going to change anything unless you're going to build a house.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
don't put it across these two trees.
That's right.
Unless you want a split level.
Well, unless you want a treehouse.
That's true.
You could do that. So he planted 15,000 palms. Now, I don't know how one person or even a group of people can plant 15,000 palms.
Don't they have those little seed little things with the wheels on them that drop them into the ground?
I don't know if they have seeds.
Put them in a shotgun and just drive around shooting
there
into the
is.
Ground.
So then he had these palms growing. He had these reservoirs and swimming pools. And the Boy Scouts came along and they started stocking the ponds with crayfish, which is cool.
Those Boy Scouts, oh man, you got to keep them out of your yard. If you have a pool in your backyard, don't have any Boy Scouts over. They'll stock that with crayfish,
that's right.
As they're known.
Octopus or anything in there. So, you know, as this time goes on, he's building this thing up. And then as usual, what happens over time, especially in California, floods, flash floods.
And fires.
It just, you know, decimated a lot of it. But still, it wasn't enough where it completely destroyed the project.
Well, yeah, with 15,000 palms, you have a little wiggle room.
Right. In the 1970s, the Coachella Valley finger-toed lizard was discovered.
So it has fingers for toes?
It does. It has little fingers, like web little fingers.
It's toed, like T-O-E-D, not T-O-A-D, where it just has a whole bunch of little toads for fingers.
Oh, right. So they discovered this, and it created a whole area because it was endangered. And you know, in California, you find something that's endangered, you know, everybody goes, whoa,
back off.
Whoa. So, you know, it changed how the area was going to be used. So through donations and acquisitions, the area was dedicated into a reserve, and it operated or now operates as a Thousand Palm Oasis and McCollum Oasis Preserves, now reaching 880 acres.
Yeah, that's 10 times, more than 10 times.
Yeah, that's right. The name comes from a legend that there were 1,000 braves that were killed there in battle. So I didn't catch if that was like a legend they were just talking about or that was a real battle. I don't know what happened. But that's why they call it 1,000 palm, not because somebody went out there and counted them.
Yeah.
You know.
And it was 15,000 anyway.
We forgot about the one guy.
Right? Oh, yeah.
The end result is that once this business was started, this small business was started, it created a legacy. You know, he kind of worked this around the environment and what was happening. Because who would think about creating a business on one of the biggest, if not the biggest, earthquake fault in North America? on it. We're talking about on it. This is not next to it. It's not in a general area. This is on it. And so he benefited the community. And so what ended up happening is that we were able to preserve this area. And it also is the third largest oasis in the world and the second largest aquifer in the United States.
Wow. And we need it here.
Yes. So stay tuned to our takeaways where we're going to talk to you about a legacy in your business and how they can work together.
You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com. Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
So today, since we're talking about one of the driest places in the world,
yes,
we thought we'd also talk about one of the greenest places
right.
in the world, Ireland.
Yes, we've been there.
Both Palm Springs and Ireland are known for supporting the arts. Palm Springs is a lot. There's so many galleries there with all that beautiful.
And all the sculptures down the middle of that street. Mm.
Yeah, it's a good art town. And Ireland wants to become a little more like Palm Springs, I guess, because they wanted to boost their arts. So basically, income earned by writers, composers, visual artists, and sculptors from the sale of their works is not taxed under certain circumstances in Ireland, which...
Everybody's moving there, I'm sure, right now.
Yeah, all the artists. Artists must file a claim with the review commissioners who determine whether the work is original, creative, and has cultural or artistic merit. Think about that. Your tax rate depending on whether the tax man thinks that what you do has merit. Oh, man. I would never pay taxes, or I'd pay all the taxes depending on how they do it. It also must fit within the five following categories: books or other forms of writing, plays, musical compositions, paintings, or other similar pictures, and sculptures. So hopefully Ireland can use this to become more of an art mecca like Palm Springs is.
And you remember what Andy Warhol said when they asked him, what is art?
Whatever you can get away with,
exactly.
I believe. Yeah.
Exactly.
Soup cans, mostly.
That's right.
Now it's time for a travel tip, where we tell you what things you can do around the Palm Springs area.
The last time that we were in Palm Springs, we discovered something that has been there for quite a while, and we never discovered it. All these years, 30 years we've been going there. And I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right, but it's the Tokwitz Canyon. I think that's how you pronounce it. Tokwitz.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's owned by the Agua Caliente Band of Kahuilla Indians, and it's an amazing place because it's not like your national parks, it's not like your state parks. It's a park that's operated by the Native Americans there, and so the price is a little more pricey than the states. I think the state parks or federal parks, I think it was $12 for adults, but that's because they're providing the maintenance for the whole thing.
Yeah, they have to hire people to take care of it.
And so it's really cool. I mean, it's really a place to go and see if you're in the Palm Springs area. Now, they have guided walks that you can go to that happen four times a day. And they do this in the summertime, too.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine. You know, we've been out there over 100 degrees, 110.
I won't leave the room until it becomes dark.
They won't let you take the room with you on the trail.
Oh, really?
That's right.
They got to have some sort of AC backpack. Someone's got to have invented that by now.
So you walk up to this waterfall. Now, usually, like in the summertime, this waterfall is like trickling, you know. But we've had so much rainfall lately that it's just gushing. Now, we're in the wintertime. It's really gushing. But they've had like flash flood type things. They have washed out bridges, and they have to rebuild the bridges. Now, these are just not real big bridges, but like walking bridges, like stones that...
Yeah, to what get they, you what over they do, the...
What they do is, I think I'll put a picture of this on the... on our website, is that they basically take stones and they pour like a slurry in between the stones and they make this kind of a bridge, a walk bridge over it, but the water still goes underneath it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting how they do this. And but it's there is problems when we have big rains and things get washed out and they got to build them again. You know, the guy who's the guide also built the bridges.
Yeah.
You know, they all work together. So it's really cool. And so we really suggest you go on that guided tour, but if you don't have the time to get there those four times a day, because it's like an hour and a half, you could do your own. They give you a map, and there's all these little spots that you could stop and look and read all about. So it's really cool about the environment there, and there's a great history. It's actually named after the shaman that is still there. He's up there. They can't see him because he comes down and steals your soul every now and then.
Oh, okay.
I left 15 pounds lighter and I came there, so I think I lost mine.
Is that what the soul weighs?
I think it was.
I'm packing on a lot of soul weight, I guess. Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what specific steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast.
The first tip is your long-term business passion just to build a successful business or make an impact on your community? If so, you should include this vision in a 20-year strategic plan. Now, I could give you a good example of this, of somebody that you know of that actually had this, and that was Magic Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
He invested in Starbucks in the Crenshaw District in areas that were economically struggling at this time. And he had said in his talk at UC Irvine that he was trying to get a franchise into the area and that all the other franchises would not back him up. They said, no, the business would be bad. You know, black people don't eat this. They don't drink this. They don't do that. That kind of thing. You know, really just stereotyping people. The guy, the president from Starbucks said, I believe in you. And he did it. And it's amazing. It's helped the area. It's brought other businesses in. Mm-hmm. And so he did more than just a strategic plan to become wealthier. And he is wealthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he actually helped the whole community. And he's done that in other places too.
The second thing to think about is your business situated in a place where there are environmental or cultural treasures? You might want to investigate this in case the government puts restrictions on your operations. It happens all the time, especially in California.
Yes.
But it's important to not go in buying a whole bunch of property and then realizing you can't use it.
Yeah, one of them, for example, is like Malibu, and up and down the California coast, is you have to deal with the Coastal Commission. And that is a big deal. So do your homework first. Number three, if you're preparing your 20-year combined plan, that's one of a vision of a business and helping your community, the plan should not only have a financial and business benchmarks, but also have benchmarks that embrace the cultural and the environmental vision that you have.
Yeah, you want to plan for both parts of it. I mean, you're trying to create a legacy after
all. In other words, maybe you may be wanting to do something business-wise that's going to hurt the culture or the environment in your area. So you have to take that into consideration if you want to do things on both levels.
The fourth thing to think about is to keep your eyes open for others that may share in your environmental or cultural vision. They can help you raise donations, maybe create a nonprofit. And even if you're not going a nonprofit direction, if you find people that share your vision, they're going to be better employees. They're going to be better coworkers if they also want to work towards this same goal.
Right. And that really helped Paul Wilhelm in our story because he had the small little area, but because it was such a cool area and he worked really hard to keep it going, is that there was other people that came in and bought the properties that end up being donated into this preserve. Number five is have an exit plan in your strategic plan that is in line with both your visions. For example, you may want to sell your business, but donate the surrounding property to a nonprofit. And I've seen that a lot too, where people would have this piece of property and have a lot. There's a good example over here, the La Bologna Wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that there's a place called, of all places, Titmouse Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that was donated by somebody. And
that little park.
Right. And you walk through that to get to the wetlands. All right. It's big wetlands. And the funny thing about it is that there's never been a titmouse on that entire property. So why it's called that, I don't know.
How do you know? They're pretty small. Now it's time to answer some questions from our listeners. And today we have an email from Joe asking, I have a business that leases our property for events like weddings and other party stuff. Should I lease or buy my equipment? The lease I'm looking at is one where I'd own the property after 5 years of lease payments.
You know, Joe, this is a common question that I get from a lot of clients. And the short and the long of the answer is it depends on your lease. And so what I'd like you to do is take your lease and look at the number of payments that you have and then add them all up. The next thing is that if you are looking to purchase, or as an option, purchase, go to your bank, find out the interest rate is, and add up all those payments. Now, look at the totals that you have there, purchasing the property or leasing it. And is the lease way above what it was if you were to purchase it?
Yeah.
The lease has a buyout. I assume Joe's saying that the lease has a buyout at the end for $1. That's usually what it is. And so, you know, let's say a piece of property that you're trying to purchase that normally would cost $10,000, if you had a loan, would cost, let's say, $11,000. But if you leased it and then bought it, it would be $15,000. Well, then, you know, it sounds like that a better business deal would be to try to purchase it, not lease it. And of course, the other consideration that a lot of people think about is they say, well, I just don't have money for the 20%
down payment. Yeah.
And that's a big concern, too. So do those first, Joe, and look at it and sit back and, you know, use common sense.
That's all we have for this week. Tune in next week when we're going to finish up in the Palm Springs area by talking about the power windmill business.
I got power.
I'm going to sing that so much. Next episode. Tune in for that. But until then, I'm Brandon.
And this is Rick. Thanks a lot for letting us get into your business no matter where it is.
Our music and podcast was produced by my brother, Devin S. Norris. For all your music composition and podcast needs, check out www.devinsnorris.com.